Hippocrates would not have approved of lame excuses.
And I promise to begin exploiting my family before the end of the day.
Nice suit. Thank you.
Very good. You get a gold star.
Hailing frequencies open. You are listening to Treknologic's listening post that goes with Treknologic 152, where we reviewed the original series episode, Conscience of the King, for Stardate 2014.222. Pew, pew, pew.
That never gets old.
First up, Space Mailbag.
Our first mail is from Glimmer Twins fan. Yay! As usual, I thoroughly enjoyed your review of TNL 150, Eye of the Needle. Following your scale, I give the episode a 7. Exceptional. It's a type of episode that you could show to a non-Trek fan and say, see, that's what Star Trek is all about. If I were to show a few episodes to someone who never saw Star Trek before, I'd probably pick the following. From TNG, The Inner Light. From Enterprise, Dear Doctor. From Deep Space Nine, The Visitor. From Voyager, Blink of an Eye. From the original series, The City on the Edge of Forever. Thanks for all your hard work, Glimmer Twins fan.
Those are all pretty good episodes.
Those are. You notice he didn't put in there anything about the animated series.
Oh, yeah. What the heck?
Yes, probably because... You'd want to show one of those to somebody.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because if you ever wanted to show a non-Star Trek fan something to try to get them involved in Star Trek, the animated series, probably not something. Unless they're like 2 to 4 years old and they love bright colors.
Yes, especially purple.
Especially purple.
You know, I think Voyager Blink of an Eye is a really awesome episode, but I don't know if I would show that to somebody who had never seen it before.
I don't know. I can't remember watching.
That's the one where the planet is really, really sped up and they're in orbit.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's an awesome episode, but.
Yeah, it might not be the first one that I show. I would show like
awesome.
Something super cheesy like Bride of Chaotica.
Again, while that is fun to watch, I don't necessarily feel it's going to tell you what Voyager's about. Pretty much the same argument, the other scale.
All right, next, Ben.
From Cindy. Oh, wow. Bloopers at the end of a listening post. Hey, Bill. The Chips characters you were trying to remember were Frank Poncherello and John Baker. Ponch and John. Not forgetting the actor who played their boss, Sergeant Guitrere, one Robert Pine is Chris Pine's father. As well as the fact that this show featured a much younger Michael Dorn.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
That's right, it did.
That is so awesome.
I... totally did not remember that. I remember everybody else, but not Michael Dorn.
Yep, I remembered it as soon as you read it, though.
It's totally a Star Trek thing. We can totally use, you know, Chips.
All right, our next email is from Steve. All, regarding Firefly / Mikepocalypse. The excellent Firefly episode, Out of Gas, is told through a series of flashbacks. Could be construed as time travel from a storytelling perspective. Firefly, Out of Gas, Season 1, Episode 8, tells a story alternately in 3-frame time frames, events in the present, events in the near past, and that led to the present, and events in the past. Thanks, Steve from Maryland. I would just like to say, yeah, thanks, Steve from Maryland.
Woo, Steve from Maryland, you are awesome.
Well, we really don't need any suggestions for Mikepocalypses.
No, I'm all for that. Please send all your suggestions.
And I'm going to call shenanigans because flashbacks do not count as time travel.
Yeah,
it does, in fact, because River's there and she's probably just remembering the past in the future and the present.
No.
That is true. Mike is trying River, to avoid seeing Firefly, and we've decided we're going to try to find some way to like trick him into it.
Right.
She allows all flashback episodes.
And I don't understand how you can be backing them up on this, Ben, when you hate every space western that we've reviewed.
Except for Firefly.
See? I'm telling you, it's special. It's special, Mike.
All right. Let's move on.
James wrote in, "Hi, folks. I enjoy the podcast, and I think this is the first time James has written us.
Might be.
It might be. So, hey, James. Thank you for writing in, number one. I enjoy the podcast, and I know Carrie likes the science stuff. So I wondered if she had seen this genuine story in the news. And he was kind enough to provide us a link to BBC, but he gave us a nice summary, which is basically some scientists have invented a way of making a tractor beam using water waves that is capable of pulling objects towards the source of the waves instead of pushing them away as you might expect waves to do.
Wow!
That is pretty cool and Trekkie in itself, but wait till you hear the name of the paper's senior author, Schatz. Yep, that's right. Professor Schatz. The article does not mention whether his swivel chair is bigger than everyone else's or if his shirts keep getting accidentally torn while at work. Kind regards, James Teabag of the United Kingdom.
Nice. That's pretty awesome.
And let me just say that these scientists that did this, it was pretty cool because they made like specific wave patterns and they were able to move the ball in like different ways around the tank.
Oh, wow.
I know. And they figured out how to do waves that could make the objects move against
the current,
the direction of the wave. Yeah.
Wow. That's really cool.
I know. And it's really awesome because they actually have like little, you know, because you want to be able to trace how the waves are going.
Yeah.
And so they have this really cool thing where they put that these little particles in there so they could see how the water's going. And that's how they know.
Oh, yeah.
Things are moving the opposite direction.
Wow.
It's pretty sweet looking.
All right. Well, thanks, James.
I want one of them. And I wanted to go to my refrigerator, from my refrigerator to my couch.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good. Except and I then you'd have to fill your house up with water.
And I want, well, I mean, it would be like having a pool.
All the time.
All the time.
Oh my gosh. You could use that at a swim-up pool or a swim-up bar.
My gosh, that would be awesome.
Oh yeah, they just use it to like send stuff to your table.
Right, you just hit a button on your table and the tractor beam kicks in.
Yes. And it brings your little like drink with the umbrella towards you.
Right, that's right.
We need this. Like, we need this to happen now. I see commercial properties for this already.
Oh, all right. Next up is voicemails. We've got one from Mark from France.
Ooh, go, Mark.
Hi, relativistivists. It's Mark in Paris with some comments on the latest episodes I've been listening to. I'll start with your listening post for episode 118, Tapestry. A listener wrote about the Bayeux tapestry. No. It's the Bayeux tapestry. And it's not actually a tapestry. It's a work of embroidery. It's found in Bayeux, a city in Normandy in northern France. Bayonne is a city in the opposite end of France, in the Basque Country, in the southwest. And I'm guessing that's why Bayonne, New Jersey, is called Bayonne. But I don't know exactly why. But in any case, it's Bayeux. Bayonne is famous for ham. Bayeux is in Normandy, so I guess it's famous for dairy products. But it's a very interesting document, the Bayeux tapestry. And you go and you visit the museum where it's displayed, and it's this long, 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 long strip, which is telling a story, kind of like a comic book, continuous, you know, image of scene after scene after scene on this long, long, long strip of cloth, which goes all the way around the room. Episode 119, the maquis. Well, maquis is a French word, and it means a scrubland. It's the kind of environment you find typically in southern France around the Mediterranean, kind of like I think you would find in maybe parts of Texas or California, kind of scrubland, thorn bushes. It's not very hospitable. It smells good because of the herbs and so on in the sun, but it's kind of harsh land, a little bit forbidding, foreboding, whatever, kind of like the Australian bush. It became the refuge for Frenchmen who were fleeing forced labor in Germany during the war, part of the armistice with the Germans at the start of World War II, was that France had to provide labor in Germany. And so men were conscripted to go work in German factories and whatnot, and farms. And it was not very nice, and a lot of men fled that forced labor And later, taking refuge in the Maquis, they would become resistance fighters and part of the organized resistance. And they were known as Maquisards, you know, from the Maquis, Maquisards. So, you know, Maquis as for a person isn't quite right, but it's still a very interesting choice in the writers to associate what's going on in, you know, with the Cardassians with this, you know, period of history on Earth. For that episode, I liked your reminder during the review that there was a lot going on for Starfleet at this time of the events of the episode. They had a lot of problems. And it would have been nice for that admiral to tell Sisko something like, yes, we've heard the reports of gun running into the colonies, and we know there are issues, but we have X, Y, and Z going on elsewhere in the quadrant. And the last thing we need is a new war with the Cardassians. So unless we have our noses jammed into it, the Federation is not going to do anything. And that would give another choice to Sisko. It would justify, first of all, the attitude of his friend who had done his job of, you know, telling the Federation, Starfleet, that there was nasty stuff going on and not getting any response. And so, you know, maybe Sisko's decision then is, well, we're, you know, instead of hiding this, I'm going to, you know, make sure that Starfleet has to deal with it. Kind of as an aside, I could imagine him going to the press about the situation. And that made me realize that we actually don't really hear about the press in the Star Trek series. It's supposed to be a democratic regime. Supposedly there's a free press, but I don't know. Do we ever hear stories of issues relating to the press? That's kind of surprising because
I don't think we do.
Actually, Jake works for the press through the whole half end of that series.
Oh, does he?
Yes, oh, yeah,
that's
right.
That's why he stays behind when they abandon the station.
Oh, yeah, he does. So basically, DS9 is the only place we ever hear about press.
Yeah,
Star Trek.
Correct. It's the only place we hear about it, but it is a fairly significant chunk of the show when it is brought up.
And I also like how the Maquis is a place that's dry and inhospitable. I think it's very fitting.
Yes. Kind of like a lot of the members of the Maquis.
Yes.
Dry and inhospitable.
Yep.
Yeah, because remember that was a trivia question that there was about where Jake worked.
All right. Continuing the voicemail.
Military secrets from the press being open. You know, how does the military operate? Starfleet, does military operate in a free society like the Federation is supposed to be? I think it may have been in the listening post for Tapestry or for this one. But Jay from Brazil, this was a year ago, he was talking about a reboot of Howard the Duck. And apparently now this is really big news because of the Guardians of the Galaxy post-closing credit stuff. I haven't seen it, but apparently people are, you know, saying that there really could seriously be a return of Howard the Duck, which is kind of horrible. You know, it's kind of like a character. I don't think it's supposed to be like that, but it kind of reminds me of that horrible character from that other space series. Anyway, so, Jay, good job for you. You are really good at predicting the future. Maybe you'll get hired by the Relativity or the Time Corps. Also, Jay, I think in the same time, he spoke of the definition of the third world. And I thought I'd do my little, you know, history lesson about that. And, you know, there's a lot of confusion about the term third world. But the origin of that term comes from a time after World War II, when you had NATO, the Western Bloc, the capitalist countries, the industrialized world, they were known as the First World. You had the Warsaw Pact, Comic-Con, communist bloc countries, who were the Second World. And then you had everyone else, the non-aligned countries, who were the Third World. So this is, first of all, more of a political designation than a purely economic one, even though, of course, the notions are kind of similar at the time. The industrialized countries were just about all in either the First World or the Second World. So that, you know, that conception of the Third World is really associated with the Cold War, with these two blocks facing off against each other. Well, episode 120, Family, I liked that Carrie made the connection between Robert's rejection of technology and his and Renee's death from a house fire that we hear about in Generations. Although I note that even today it's a requirement to have smokers in houses. So, you know, there's really no excuse for this. It's kind of an absurd accident, even for somebody who is not very fond of technology. You observe that a vineyard like Chateau Picard would require a huge amount of labor without using technology. Even today, with technology, the wine harvest requires a lot of hands, often migrant workers and students. So in the world of Star Trek, maybe working on a farm like that is a leisure activity, kind of a back to nature sort of holiday. Given the probable rareness of farms operating without modern technology, there'd probably be plenty of labor, people who want to have that experience. Maybe.
Yeah. I'm going on a working vacation. What? Well, because, you know, when I'm not on vacation, I'm just sitting around my house all day replicating stuff.
I'll take my replicator rations, please.
All right, continuing.
Also raises, you know, the whole issue of economics in the Federation. I really don't have much faith in how it can work. You know, money is a good way of kind of organizing priorities and allocating resources. And, you know, think about what happens with something like a bottle of Chateau Picard wine. It's very rare. There's a limited quantity of it in a universe or in a Federation of, you know, billions and billions and millions and millions of people who might all want to have such a bottle. So who gets it? It has a lot of value. And then you imagine, you know, because of that, it's kind of human nature to barter, to trade, even if it's in the context of, you know, a gift. You know, this is a gift with a great deal of value. So in what context would you give such a gift? And, you know, you come back to all these issues of value and kind of the advantages of currency as a replacement for the clumsy economics of bartering. And, you know, I don't know. I'm sure there have been studies done, academic papers about how the Federation and Starfleet economics work. But I think it's a real problem. I think it's just too easy to say we don't have money, especially because they're trading with people who do use money. And, you know, in the Star Trek universe, you ended up having to go back to, you know, Latinum. And because of the kind of foolishness of creating the technology of transporters and replicators, it becomes very hard to have a unit of something to be used as a currency. So, you know, I guess is the idea that Latinum can't be replicated. So it's, you know, it's suitably rare. It's really quite odd that this most advanced economy and civilization ends up going back to something, you know, like the gold standard and barter. And I don't know that that's necessarily a modern way of looking at how society should operate. I think you can have a different kind of economy without simply saying that we don't have money, which seems to be the message in some of the films and movies and series. Anyway,
I like just saying we don't have money.
It's an interesting topic for discussion, and maybe I'll have a look on the forum to see if people talk about that or refer to other people who do talk about it. So some good Star Trek episodes and some good Treknologic episodes. Thanks again. Signing off. Adieu. Ciao. Bisous. Bye-bye from Paris.
All right. And here's another voicemail from Mark in France.
Hello, relativistivists. It's Mark from Paris commenting on Treknologic 114, during which you review Children of Time. That's a Deep Space Nine episode. And a kind of silly one. It's an opportunity for me to reveal a secret that won't make me a favorite on your time ship, probably not forums either, but it's true. I hate time travel stories. Hate. They're stupid. Head hurt. They usually just don't work. They're implausible. You need to invent all sorts of mechanics around them and create logical inconsistencies. The system of time travel and how it all is supposed to work doesn't correspond from one episode to another, from one series to another. I agree with the Vulcan High Command. Time travel is impossible. Here's a short example from this episode. The initial plan to save the Defiant descendants was to duplicate the Defiant and crew. One set would return to Deep Space Nine. The other would go back 200 years in time, crash on the planet, and found the Defiant descendants colony. Jadzia ends up realizing that this scheme won't work, and that they will only crash, creating the colony. They decide not to try to avoid that. They're going to follow through with the plan to crash so that the colony will continue to exist. Odo secretly modifies the flight plan so that instead they successfully escape the planet and return to Deep Space Nine, where he can make sweet changeling love to Kira. So in so doing, they destroy the colony. Even though it clearly existed, since they were just there. Now, they present this as two options. Shall I stay or shall I go? I think I saying it wrong. But anyway, there are probably more than two options. They could just stay there. There was not just the alternatives of leaving or crashing. Kira would die if they stayed, but she was going to die anyway if they crashed, which is what they wanted to do, which she wanted them to do. If they had just stayed, what would have happened to the colony? They exist. There would be no reason for them not to continue to exist, but they couldn't exist because they only exist because the Defiant crashes on leaving. You see how stupid it is? Really, really stupid. This is the proof that this time travel crap cannot exist as it's shown. Anyway, you'll probably mumbo-jumbo techno-babble your way around it. Time loops, alternative paradoxes, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't work. As I would like to quote Bill in this episode, he says, kind of messed up, actually. I agree that the story did allow characters to move forward, in particular Odo and Kira. It presents interesting problems for the characters to deal with. Should we stay? Should we go? Blah, 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 blah. Voila. So it's not a total loss, but it just annoys me to no end.
Okay, so it's not really mumbo jumbo. If they didn't leave, the colony just would disappear. Didn't you see Back to the Future?
My thought on this is, even if we say anything, he's already said that he's going to dismiss it.
Well, he said he sure will come up with mumbo jumbo, but it's not mumbo jumbo because they just disappear.
Right, but it doesn't matter what we say because he's just decided that anything you say is mumbo jumbo and not worth listening to.
Well, because it's very Vulcan. That's what they would do too.
The difference is they don't say it ahead of time. They just stare at you while you're talking.
All right, continuing.
Now, I wanted to note an article that was just featured on space.com. It said that 20,000 to 40,000 people would be ideal for a colony population. While you could do it with fewer people, 48 is far too low to create a lasting community. Yep. You may say that the various species involved, Trill, human, Klingon, whatever, give extra genetic diversity to the colony. But that raises the question of how they manage to interbreed. Big question. We do know that in the universe of Star Trek, interspecies breeding is possible, and that the offspring themselves can be fertile. You supposed, and I would agree, that this takes some special fiddling around, in vitro fertilization, whatever. It's never really presented as such in the show, I don't think. But it's clear that in any case, you would need advanced medical treatment to create and carry through a pregnancy like this. Think of how often there are problems with a regular human-human pregnancy. What's it going to be like for interspecies pregnancies? It seems unlikely that a battleship like Defiant would have a sickbay suitable for such specialized care. There could have been a more interesting fix to the problem of diversity. What if the planet had been inhabited by another humanoid species, and the people that the Defiant crew meet are descendants of the interbreeding of those people and themselves 200 years earlier? You'd have more genetic diversity, but less emotional tugging on the heartstrings, of course.
Or maybe instead of 200 years in the past, they could have gone to 2,000 years or 20,000 years in the past, giving the colony more time to develop, but weakening the connection to the crew. Time travel sucks. Now, some comments about your review. Bill is surprised that people eat blood. The Maasai in Africa regularly bleed their cattle for food. And as Carrie said, there's blood sausage, which is so good, especially with apples. Yum. Boudin noir. Yum, yum, yum. When you discuss the so-called Klingons on the colony, who beg Worf to kill them so that they'll die a warrior's death rather than just disappearing, I blurted out a name the situation made me think of. And at the same moment, Bill did the same. I thought there was a problem with my audio player. Now, I'm repeating it because you all missed it when Bill said it, and it was great. It was really funny. He and I said, Dr. Kworfian. If you don't get it, have him explain. I'm deformed by being a Michigander, but apparently, if Bill knows it, other people know it too. This is getting to be a theme. Bill and me saying the same things. We may have shared a symbiont at some point. And I guess I'm showing myself to be, a Bill fan, because I've been watching the Big Quiz thing, which seems to be no longer on the air, which is a pity, because it was fun. If there are more, or going to be more, I'd like to know. That's all for me now. Live long and podcast, and I'm looking forward to your next episode. Yay!
All right.
I thought that they were able to interbreed because of the whole background that there was actually a progenitor race to all humanoid life in Star Trek, one seed race.
Yeah, that could be, but still, I mean, there's enough difference, like he was saying, you know, just with a regular human to human pregnancy, a lot of times there are complications. So with two, a human and an alien, or two aliens, different races, you would think the chances would be higher that something could go wrong, and you would want really specialized medical equipment to take care of it, just in case.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we've also come across, like, in Voyager with, what is the little girl's name with the horns on her head? Naomi Wilder.
Yeah.
I mean, she did have some complications. I mean, they didn't have a super specialized med bay and weren't able to handle it.
Well, but they had the doctor.
Yeah.
He's super specialized, if I don't say so myself.
He's a Mark One.
Yeah.
But I mean, they still had, people who could have dealt with it.
Well, Bashir?
Okay, just because you don't like his personality doesn't mean he's not a good doctor. And they also had Dax. I'm sure she spent a lifetime or two.
Yeah, as a doctor somewhere.
All right.
Could be. All right. So that brings us to the end of the listening post. So I will close us out here. You can send us feedback by giving us a nice iTunes review, which Carrie was just talking about. You can email us at feedback@treknologic.com. You can even email us voicemails. You can tweet us at Treknologic. You can find us on Facebook and Google+. And we also have a forum at treknologic.com. Thank you for listening to our discussion of feedback. Until next time, on behalf of everyone here at Treknologic, live long and prosper.